You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bruce Davidson started taking pictures when he was 10 years old. He won his first award at 16, and his college thesis was published in Life magazine. He's been a member of the renowned international photography agency Magnum Photos since 1958, and among his most famous projects are his books about a gang in Brooklyn, the Freedom Riders and the Civil Rights Movement, East Harlem, the subway, and Central Park. His work is in the collections of the Museum of Modern Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the International Center for Photography, and the Smithsonian. And he's here to talk to us about street photography. Welcome back to the show, Bruce.
Thank you, Leonard.
You grew up in Illinois. What led you to move to New York, and how old were you?
Well, my mother was a single parent, and when I was about 16, she remarried, and we moved east.
Could you have been just as successful at what you do if you had stayed in Illinois? Because Chicago has a lot of street life.
It does. But we lived in Oak Park. But my mother allowed me when I was 15 or 16 to travel into New York, into Chicago's loop with my camera. And as long as I was home before dark. And I never broke that because I enjoyed getting on the L and riding through all those neighborhoods and then photographing Maxwell Street.
So from the start, your impulse was to do street photography?
My impulse was to explore and to find myself through my exploration.
Now, photography in the earliest days took a certain amount of time. There would people had to sit still for a while. When did street photography begin?
I think street photography probably began with the advent of the roll film. But actually, Ache was a street photographer working with a large bellows camera and a tripod and slow film and whatnot.
But he was mostly recording what places and people looked like. Things changed somewhere along the line. Street photography means something different today. Is that because of people like Henri Cartier-Bresson?
Well, I think so. I think, first of all, once the camera became mobile and insignificant, photographs could be made candidly on the street without people really paying any attention.
Did you meet Cartier-Bresson?
I met Cartier-Bresson. He was a mentor.
And what does that mean? He influenced the way you thought about taking pictures?
He gave me critiques. He told me, I have to read more, for instance. But he was an avid reader.
And what would reading have done for you?
Because
we're talking about a visual medium.
Yeah, but a visual medium is also about a concept, a philosophy. It's born out of your self, you see. And street photography is too. I mean, the street photographers that are successful have a philosophical point of view.
Were you living in France at the time?
I was in the intelligence corps outside of Paris, but I had a motor scooter and I could ride in every weekend.
Do you think it was easier to find new and interesting things to photograph in the early days of your career? Because by now, there's a feeling that almost everything has been photographed by professionals and talented amateurs.
Yeah. It all depends on your state of mind and what you bring to a subject. And also, the street can be like a spinal cord. It holds you together. But what's important about a spinal cord is all the nerves that come out and emanate out of it. So my street photography, at least, has been a street photography that's discreet, that I make contact with people and I live in communities for a while. And that makes a difference.
So you're not one of those people who just, like Lisette Modell, just moves up to somebody, snaps a picture, and then walks away.
I can, and I have. When I worked in the subway, I had three possibilities. One is to make contact with the person, and if they hesitated, I showed them a little portfolio of my work on the subway. Or I could photograph them and then make contact, or I could photograph and run like hell.
And you get very different kinds of pictures from each, don't you?
Well, I was able to direct people back into the mood that they were in. I would say what was beautiful about you was what you were dreaming about.
Although you usually have photographed in black and white, the subway pictures were in color. Was there a reason for that?
Well, I started in black and white, but then I became aware of a visual medium that had to be in color.
I'm not sure I understand.
Subway was full of graffiti, even the iridescent fluorescent light that's ghostly and all had a color meaning. The meaning changed once I photographed in color.
We have this contest, and people are submitting photographs to WNYC's Street Shots contest. So a number of them were shot in the subway. And they're interesting to compare with your pictures because the trains are so different now. Yeah. They're well lit. They're clean.
Right.
Most of them don't have graffiti. Sometimes there's a little bit of stuff scratched into the windows, but right. little else. So is the subway still a compelling subject?
Not for me. I've gone on. I work out of a state of mind. I remember a magazine asked me to photograph a woman that I'd photographed on the subway in exact same spot, but 25 years later. And it happened to be a spot on the train where the World Train was in the background. And we rode around and around until I could get that moment, even though it was vacant. Yes.
But you have, that's not the first time you've returned to a subject,
no.
a place, a person.
No, I return all the time. I find subjects all the time.
And what happens when you return? Do you find that everything has changed totally, or
I think things change, but I just want to make contact with people I've photographed maybe 25 or 30 or 40 years ago, you know.
And what happens when you talk to them? Do they remember the experience the first time?
Sometimes they do. For instance, recently I donated a print to a union settlement. And it turned out that the photograph that I donated was a photograph of a child on a fire escape. That child is their cook,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I'm anxious to meet the cook. You know, I'm kind of nosy that way. I want to see what happened with my photographs, with my subjects. And also, I don't want to lose track. I'm still connected.
And it's also interesting to see the way things have changed and the way things have remained the same.
That's right.
In the case of the World Trade
That's
Center,
right.
you know, we can date pictures that we see from whether they were there or they're no longer there.
That's right. That's right. I recently, when I say recently, the last 10 years, I found a family that I photographed during the Selma March. And they all, except one person, lived in the same community. Rural community. So I met them. I photographed them. They all have successful lives. And the reason for it was the Voting Rights Act in 65. The younger children were able to get a decent education, and they're all successful.
My guest is Bruce Davidson, who's here to talk about street photography, something he's been doing for pretty much all of his career, going back to – when did you begin?
Oh, I began when I was 16 years old. Photographing on the street,
and I'm pushing for when that was.
Oh well, that was 1949.
Mm. You talked about community, you have often focused on communities, including odd kinds of communities like the Brooklyn Gang.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, that a few years ago, the leader of the Brooklyn Gang looked me up. And I was scared stiff. I thought it was going to be a shakedown. This is a powerful street gang in 1959 that I photographed. And then 40 years later, the gang leader calls me out of the blue. Well, my wife has been working on a book with this gang leader for 9.5 years. That's how rich his life is, his incredible life. And when we had an exhibition at ICP, he brought in all the gang members. And we had pizza, and they bragged about what they did. You know,
so you actually had recorded an important time in their lives, and they remembered you for it.
Yes,
I'm sure some of them were aware that a book had been published as well.
Yeah, in fact, Benji, the leader of the gang, has been carrying an Esquire in a tear sheet in his back pocket for years, gathering up the courage to call me.
How long does it take before people forget that you're there, and you just can become a fly on the wall?
Well, you know, I was a fly. I was a skinny little, quiet little mousy kind of person, but I was absorbing. And people appreciated that I wasn't trying to engage them in any kind of sociological idea. I was just trying to record them and feel them and understand that I was seeing them with passion.
And so you weren't asking, why do you do this kind of stuff?
No, not at all.
And did you? Was it important to get them to trust you?
Yes, and trust is very important in photography. And you have to have patience, and you have to have purpose, and you have to have a relationship to your subject.
Well, in the case of the gang, you would have to ask for permission.
Yeah, well, in the gang, I was able to get model releases at the end of the project.
Sometimes that is impossible. As you said, sometimes you just take the shot and you run like hell. But there are people who feel that that's an unethical approach.
I agree. I call my photography not street photography, but discreet photography. In fact, I try to make contact, and I can. Or I photograph in such a way that is not making a case that is illegal.
Well, there is also what the image imparts. There are pictures where I don't really care whether somebody took my picture while I was doing this thing on the street or walking down the street. But then there may be other things where I might be a bit embarrassed.
Right. Or the caption could compromise.
So what happens? Have people come back to you and said, you know, I saw this picture that you published and I really am upset?
So far, that hasn't happened to me.
I know there was a case. I know in the movies now they only shoot extras, but there was a time when a man was photographed at Times Square in a convertible with his arm around a woman as part of a movie, and then he went to see the movie with his wife, and she said, "Who's that woman?" And he sued.
That can happen, but I try to make contact.
Is speed must be a really important part of street photography because 1 second you have a great image, the next second you have nothing. And I remember when I was trying to do street photography when I was in college taking a photography course, I always seemed to be a split second too late. You know, I'd have to think, oh, gee, that's really good. Get my picture, get it focused. By then, the whole thing was gone.
I remember walking down the street with Cartier-Bresson in Paris, and he said, Bruce, you have to stay close to me because a camera's like a shotgun. You don't want to get too close to the barrel. And then it was like magic. A fat man would cross the street. Lovers would be embraced behind a tree. His pictures would come out of the street almost. And I remember how focused he was. There wasn't time to chip-chat. You know, you have to sort of be in tune to the rhythm of the street, you know, and that's important to have a consciousness.
Well, recently I spoke to another photographer who photographs in Iraq. And he said that he was photographing, in fact, in this case, we were talking about his photographs of Bobby Kennedy. And he said that he was an eye and a finger, and that was it when he was really in the photography mode. Nothing else. Has that been your experience as well?
Well, you do have to have a focus, a psychological focus. Yeah, you know, when if I'm photographing, whether it's on the street or where it is, I'm completely focused. And you take the picture the night before because you set your mind to where you're going. And when I worked on the subway project, which took over a year, my wife would say, my teeth would grow. I'd hear the subway, and I was like a werewolf. And I would start to get dressed, and I had to be compelled to go out at night into the subway. You know, so that frame of mind is important, I think.
Was a project like that something that you came up with, or was that an assignment?
I think it was like everything else in life, it's contingent to something else in life. And at that time, I was sort of kicked out of Hollywood, and I was depressed. But the subway was more depressing than I was, so it made me feel good. So I rode the subway in my depression and photographed an object in depression. So that made me feel really good.
What do you mean you were kicked out of Hollywood?
Well, I tried to produce a film. I wrote a screenplay. It took me a year and a half to write the screenplay. And I just ran out of people who would give me money.
Bruce Davidson is here. We're talking about street photography, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Bruce Davidson, and we're talking about street photography. And I'm sure you're aware of the fact that WNYC has been running a contest. In fact, this is the last day to submit photos to the contest. Winner will be selected from the photo pool, and their work and story will be featured on our website. If you want more information about that, go to WNYC.org and look up the Street Shots Challenge. And Bruce, I hate to do this to you, but we have showed you some of the pictures that have been submitted. How do our listeners do? Are they good photographers?
Well, I think they are good street photographers, and I think that they have a lot of fun on the street. I mean, New York is amazing. When I say New York, I mean the Bronx, Queens, that, and the rest of it, Manhattan, of course. I just recently returned from Los Angeles, where I'm working on a project there. You can't find anyone on the street in Los Angeles.
Well, they're all in their cars.
They're in their cars, and they're exactly. And they're not on the street. So it would be difficult to do a street photography there.
But it also makes for a very different kind of a feel in a city. And one of the great things about New York and Chicago and some other cities, mm-hmm. Atlanta, I think, probably, is that there are people out there, mm-hmm. and you're interacting with people, and different neighborhoods have different feelings,
right?
Different senses about them.
That's absolutely true.
So if you were looking for a certain kind of subject, would you go to a certain neighborhood?
Well,
I mean, you shot, for example, in East Harlem.
Yes, right. I photographed in East Harlem on one block for 2 years, and then 25 years later, I went back and photographed a number of things in the East Harlem and how things changed for positive.
And why did you do that? Did that grow out of your civil rights photographs? Because East 100th Street was called the worst block in America at that time.
Right, exactly. No, I had spent a number of years photographing the civil rights movement, beginning with the Freedom Rides. I was on one of the early Freedom Rides.
Was that an assignment?
No, self-assignment. I'm a lone wolf. I have Magnum to back me up.
But you're really taking a chance sometimes, aren't you?
That
nobody will be interested in the pictures. Although Bruce Davidson does, just saying I'm Bruce Davidson, and the doors do open.
Not in the early 60s. I had to be very discreet in the way I photograph people.
So you went to East 100th Street.
Yeah.
And you just stayed on that block. And why did it take so long?
Well, because I work with a large format Bellows camera because I felt that was important, that the subject saw that the camera has a certain sense of presence. It was a dignified act. I wasn't stealing souls.
Most people would have gone with a Leica.
That's right.
Today, a teeny digital camera.
They might have gone with a Leica, but may not have ended up with a Leica. people watched out for me because I was on the block with a big camera alone, and nothing really happened to me in that 2 years.
But could it have been a dangerous block to be on?
It would be if they didn't know you and the criminal element thought that they could snatch your camera, yes.
When you went back 25 years later?
Yes, it was
the same. How much had it changed?
It had changed a lot. There were new schools, new tutorial programs, women's health. The mood of the street had changed. There were West Market Gardens. It was just wonderful to go back and photograph. I did that on an Open Society Fellowship.
Yeah. And were the changes because of government or because the people in the neighborhood really did things to affect change?
Yeah, that's right. When I started in 66, there was storefront meetings by the Citizens Committee. And that rippled over the years. And they renovated all the houses, so-called tenement houses, on the street and built a park and knew everything.
Is it important to talk to your subjects and get to know them on another level?
Well, what's important is I show my subjects my pictures. I always carry a little album with me or portfolio. I show them pictures and I send pictures to them.
So that they know that they can trust you.
Yeah, so they can see what I see.
And also know that you're not going to do things to humiliate them, to show your respect to
them. That's right. Dignity is very important.
But any number of the things that you have talked about put you into some danger. Gang, you went on the Freedom Riders trips where there were all sorts of – many people were hurt. Mm-hmm. You were going – you went to one of the most dangerous blocks in New York, or they said the most dangerous one. Were you ever worried about that?
There was so much life on the street that I was – I wasn't really – I had to watch myself, but I was about the spirit of the people and not the criminal element.
But is there something about going outside your comfort zone in doing this kind of picture? Because you'd get very different kinds of pictures if you spend all your time in familiar territory.
Right. It's important to make – to have friends that look out for you and give you a sense of where to go and how to behave.
Now, is there a difference between street photography and documentary photography? Because you are documenting a situation.
Well, I think that all imagery has a message. There's if you look into it and you understand it. I mean, or you're patient and wait years before that meaning comes out. That can happen too.
Well, there are a lot of people who will go to a neighborhood and wait until all the people are gone, all the cars have passed before they take their pictures. Mm-hmm. That would be the opposite of the way you would think?
I would think so, although I'm working on a project now that I just completed part of it in Paris where it's the nature of Paris and it has, and there aren't any people in the pictures.
And this is Paris, a city that has a lot of street life.
It has a lot of street life, but what is overlooked is the botanical life in the city. So it was Paris from the point of view of trees. And that work has been exhibited. And now I'm working in Los Angeles under sort of the same idea. And I'm really finding a lot of vegetation.
I thought it was all palm trees.
Palm trees are important because they give a spiritual meaning to cement. but I'm finding vegetation is unbelievable in growing in L.A.
So as you're getting older, the people are disappearing from your photographs?
I'm trading people in for plants.
Well, there are
at least for the time being, but I'm unpredictable. You never know. I just finished a book for a healthcare company where I photographed very sick people in their homes. And I chose to photograph them with their animals. Many of them had pets. And that was very earth-shaking for me because I was really in homes where children were very, very sick, cancer, whatnot. So, I haven't left people, but right now I need plant life.
Bruce Davidson is my guest. We've been talking about street photography. Now we're talking about plant photography. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. There's no logical segue here, but you've also done fashion photography.
I've done everything except underwater because I don't swim and war.
Now, fashion photography is very different. Did you do that simply because that was a way to pay the bills?
Early. And then I came to a dichotomy where I was going down on the Freedom Rides and the demonstrations in the South and at the same time photographing Vogue models. And I decided something's got to go.
And which went?
The fashion models.
Because Richard Avedon had the same sort of thing for a while. He took a lot of street photographs and then he started photographing fashion. And eventually he photographed people the way a fashion photographer would photograph people he just met on the street.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a great genius. There's no doubt about it. Each photographer is like a jazz musician. They may have the same instruments, but their sound is different.
Mm-hmm. And do you see when you go through all of your negatives from the beginning? Because I know you're now involved in a project of going back and reprinting things from the past. Do you find that there is some kind of a through line for you?
Well, what I've been doing for the last 2.5-3 years is going through every contact sheet that I ever made, 50 years of photography, and I've printed 1,200 individual photographs. And now I'm editing those 1,200 photographs to try to uncover the meaning of my life's work You know, which body of work, which individual photographs did you have an emotional connection and had a meaning for you that brought you into another level of consciousness? I'm calling it a consciousness journey of consciousness.
A number of photographers have told me that when they've gone back to the early pictures, they've discovered that the ones that they didn't think were interesting at the time often turn out to be more interesting than the ones that they focused on, in some cases, made them famous.
Well, that's true. I found when I edited, I had a whole book of circus photographs that I didn't know about. I never printed. I photographed the dwarf, but I also photographed the entire circus and never printed them. And as far as your question about whether a photograph you discover it, I always find that I find the emotion that prompted me. Now, I may not have printed it, but I didn't print it because I was unsure. I didn't print it because I didn't have time to print it. I was moving on.
Although our aesthetics change over our lifetimes.
The understanding of our work travels. This is very interesting for me to work this way because I can see the seeds that I planted in one body of work grew in another body of work.
You talked about walking down the street with Cartier-Bresson and having to get out of the way. Do you ever bring people along when you do a photo shoot?
Oh, yes. You know, we have two daughters. The youngest one, when she was 9 years old, we used to go on photo dates where I gave her a little half-frame 35 millimeter, and I had my Leica, and I said, this is the protocol, Anna. You see someone you want to photograph, you ask me, and then you go up to the person and ask them, and then you step back, you take their picture, and you thank them. Well, we were walking down Amsterdam Avenue, and I saw a great-looking guy, obviously a pimp, a beautiful Panama hat dressed in leather, beautiful. I said, see that man? That's Daddy's picture. She said, no, you said I could go first, Daddy. So she went first, and she went up, asked permission, stepped back, photographed. Then I went over. The guy said, not you, just her.
So, yeah. this is how a career begins.
Because a child is pure. And he knew that child was pure and that I would have some sort of hidden agenda.
After September 11th, you spent a few weeks taking photographs of people eating pastrami sandwiches at Katz's Delicatessen. Why there rather than Ground Zero or some of the other places?
Well,
other
I did go to Ground Zero at night a couple of nights. But I felt when the magazine, it was Esquire magazine, asked me to do something on America, I just didn't feel comfortable going to the Grand Canyon. I felt comfortable going to Katz's Delicatessen and photographing people eating pastrami because pastrami makes you feel very peaceful. And I thought, I wrote a little thing about peace and pastrami, and that was wonderful because America is a place where you can be wrong, where you can eat pastrami in freedom. And so that I felt that Katz's was a terrific symbol.
Although there are many people who are afraid that Katz is going to disappear too.
Katz's Delicatessen?
Yeah.
Well, that could be.
Life changes. Because it's up for sale. And we have really seen major changes in New York over the years. There used to be a lot of delicatessens.
Right,
there used to
be
a lot of – one day I was in Mexico City and I saw some – I was in a restaurant and somebody was wearing a certain kind of a uniform. And it suddenly – I had a Proustian moment where I remembered that a lot of people in New York used to wear those kinds of uniforms in kind of middle-class restaurants when I was growing up. And it had totally – disappeared.
Yeah, right.
And only old photographs remind us that there were other things that happened that created a whole different world here in New York.
That's right. I can see our neighborhood, and we've lived there for over 40 years. Now it's Victoria's Secret, it's banks, and it's nail shops. And it's hard to – you can't get an egg cream on the Lower East Side anymore unless you can order it in Spanish, you know.
Have you switched over to digital photography?
No. I go back. I'm retro. I'm working with a 4x5 press type view camera. I'm working slowly. No, I hate digital, although I love it too. But it's too easy. It's too easy.
Easy is not fun?
No, I need to struggle. And I need to take time. And I need to I still print in my darkroom. And in fact, I listen to you on the radio while I'm printing. Best prints I've ever made were on your low-paid show over the radio. No, I feel I'm the same as I was when I was 10 years old.
So you can't dodge in and well, what is it? Do you dodge out?
Or well, you can burn in and dodge out. You can do that, but I don't photo manipulate. Mm-hmm. I don't put something there that's not there.
Well, what's your latest project other than plants? Is it going to be a book?
Well, yes. Gerhard Steidel in Germany, who's a fantastic printer and publisher, plans 4 volumes or so.
That's going to be on the plants or on the retrospective?
A retrospective.
Well, I can't wait to see the complete works.
Yeah, but don't hold your breath. It's going to take a while.
Meanwhile, today is the last day for our listeners to submit photos to our photo contest, our street photography contest. One winner will be selected from the photo pool, and their work and story will be featured on our website. If you want more information about that, WNYC Street Shots Challenge, visit WNYC.org. And you, Bruce, look forward to the complete collection.
Even if it takes a little while,
you're welcome. You're already invited to come here and talk about it.
Oh, thank you. And I'll see you in my darkroom while I'm printing.
Thank you, Bruce Davidson.